Good morning. It's a pretty good song, right? Oh my goodness. Well, so we are in this series called Floating, and we'll be in the series for the next 4 weeks. And this series, it came from the idea, the concept of floating in a lazy river. And just that idea of just being in your inner tube, right? You got my inner tube here, and I'm just going to be in my inner tube, and I'm going to float along and go in a circle day after day after day and just float, 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 float. And it comes from, and really, to say this another way, is life ultimately a series of seasons of waiting? Like, do we just go from waiting for this thing to waiting for this thing to waiting for this thing to waiting for this thing? Like, do we have this thing that we're like, man, when this happens, when I get to that point, when I cross that line, my life will finally begin. You know, when I get that promotion I've deserved for so long, when I, my relationship that I'm in, when it finally gets healthy, then when I find someone who's willing to be in a relationship with me, then my life will begin. When I get out of all this debt that I'm in, I've accrued debt over the years, and it wasn't my fault, like life happened. We just find ourselves in this season of waiting for this and waiting for that and waiting and waiting and waiting. And then we go from season of waiting to season of waiting, and we're floating through life. Have you ever, and you wouldn't say this, but have you been around someone else who has said, we here at Harbor wouldn't say this, but have you heard someone say this? Right, I mean, we wouldn't say this here. But have you felt that way? Man, you know what today feels like? Same blank, different day. And really, I mean, it's hard not to, right? Like, it's hard not to at times feel like we're just floating through life. And, you know, honestly, like we can feel like we're floating for all different reasons. But maybe you are someone who you had goals and aspirations and dreams for your life, and your life just hasn't gone how you hoped it would. And so you find yourself at this stage in your life and a place in your life that you never thought you'd be at. And you remember the dreams and hopes and aspirations you had, but they seem so distant and impossible now. Or maybe you're someone who you set goals, you had aspirations, and you had things you wanted to accomplish, you had where you thought you'd be at certain stages in your life, and it's happened. And you have what you've always wanted, you have the job, you have the relationship, if you wanted kids, you have the kids, if you wanted the house, you have the house, and you look at your life, and you still feel like, same blank, different day, I am just floating through life. I mean, this idea of the lazy river, right? By the way, that's not me. I had someone be like, oh, where'd you get that picture taken? That's not me. That's just like a picture from online. That's not me. All right, anyway. But that's relaxing, right? I mean, that looks awesome. That is an amazing way to spend an afternoon. I mean, he looks relaxed. The water looks cool. It looks like the air is hot. And he is just in his inner tube, and he is just lounging, right? But what's the thing about lazy rivers? Is when you look at it, a lazy river is just a loop, right? And as you're in the lazy river, you will end up in the same place you started, and then you'll end up in the same place again, and the same place again, and the same place again. And you're just going to float through the afternoon. And then with the lazy river, that's awesome, that's fun, that's amazing. But lazy river living is no way to spend your life. It's an amazing afternoon, it's no way to live. So are we floating through life? Could there not be more? You know, there's this guy in the Bible named Solomon. You don't have to turn there. It's not going to be on the screen. But he wrote this book called Ecclesiastes. And in Ecclesiastes, He either has just gone through some sort of like existential crisis of meaning, or he is currently going through it and jotting like and like live tweeting it or something. Because in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2 through 9a, he says this: everything is meaningless. Some translations say vanity, some say without purpose. That word there, everything is meaningless, says the teacher. Completely meaningless. What do people get for all their hard work under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises and the sun sets, then hurries around to rise again. The wind blows south and then turns north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run into the sea, but the sea never is full. Then the water returns again to the rivers and flows out to the sea again. Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. History merely repeats itself. It has all been done before. And you're like, Solomon, wow, seek help, right? Like, you sound depressed, my brother. But in some ways, like, doesn't it feel familiar? Like, we've had seasons and moments, the quiet moments in our days when we put our head on our pillow and it's just us and our thoughts, when that sort of like washes over us and we feel that tension. And maybe it's not like this quiet moments thing. Maybe it's this intensity, this thing that you think of constantly and it drives you crazy. Like, I'm not who I thought I was going to be. I'm not where I thought I was. Or maybe I am exactly where I thought I was and I am discontent and I just settled for a life of settling. I am floating through life. You know, our hearts were not meant to float. They're not intent to be this, to be hearts that settle. If you float long enough, your heart will crumble. I mean, God put a desire for meaning and purpose and for you to use the gifts he gave you. I mean, that's fundamental for what it means to be human. And so if we float long enough, our heart withers and dies. There's this book by this guy C.S. Lewis called Abolition of Man. And in it, he says this. He says, you can't go on seeing through things forever. The whole point of seeing through something is to see something through it. You wouldn't put a window in front of a brick wall because you wouldn't see anything. You're right? The point of seeing through something is seeing through it. He says, to see through all things is the same as not to see. Like if you go through life and you're cynical and it's just, you're just floating through and you're pessimistic and I see through that. And like Solomon here, like he saw through everything. He saw through life. He saw through abundance. He saw through finances. He saw through relationships. He sees through it all and he could see nothing. This guy, Donald Miller, says it differently. He says this: I've never walked out of a meaningless movie thinking all movies are meaningless. I only thought the movie I walked out on was meaningless. I wonder then if when people say life is meaningless, what they really mean is their lives are meaningless. In your quiet moments, do you feel like you're floating through life? Like you intended to be somewhere else and you are not? A couple days ago, I, on Facebook, for those of you who are my Facebook friends, might have noticed that I asked a question. I said, what have you intended to do or accomplish or be or learn and you've never moved towards? And I got 7 pages worth of responses because we have lots of intentions that we don't follow through on. I mean, there are all kinds of things. You know, I have, someone said, cultivate more self-confidence, write children's books, join the Foo Fighters. That's probably out of the question. Become a mailman. That's probably possible. Write a book. Lots of people want to play instruments that they don't know how to. Lots of people want to learn languages. Lots of people want six packs. Some people want to bake bread. Some people want a six pack and they keep that six pack, like they get it and lose it, or they get close and they lose it. Lots of people, I don't know, people, like, some of them were silly. I want to learn saxophone. Some of them were meaningful, like I want a job that has meaning. I want to buy fair trade. I have a fancy camera and I have no idea how to use it. right? Like all kinds of things. Intentions, hopes, dreams. One day, I know, I'll be that. I will arrive at this destination. I will be that. And do we lose hope? Like, do we, it's just another reminder of missed opportunities. Or some of these things obviously are silly, right? Like, the person who wants to be part of the Foo Fighters. And some of them might be an inkling, a hint at something God has designed us for that we are missing out on. Like that might be just this pie in the sky dream, or it might be this holy discontent that you are unearthing and he's asking you now to walk out. What has been in the back of your mind that you felt like you were created for, that you would love to do, that you would love to accomplish, things you would, ways you'd love to change the world, and you've just been floating through life? I'm going to read a story by the same guy who wrote the previous passage, but a different stage in his life. This guy named Solomon. And Solomon at that time was the king of the country, the people he led, and the Hebrew people, and he wrote this book called Proverbs. And Proverbs is this collection of wisdom that he accrued over life, and it was directly written to people who, with all the intentions in the world, but no plan on how to walk these things out. And so in this story, in chapter 7, we'll start in verse 6, he's in his, like, I picture him in, it says he's looking out his window. I picture him in, like, this king's, like, bedroom, up high in a tower. And he looks down, and he sees more than most people, both literally and figuratively. We'll start in verse 6. While I was at the window of my house, looking through the curtain, I saw some naive young men, and one in particular who lacked common sense. Now, right here, it kind of starts like starts a little condescending. You know, he's like, I saw some young men who were naive. But he doesn't know these young men. How does he know they're naive? You know, how does he know they lack sense? It's because everyone, when you're young, is naive and lacks sense. I've been young before, and when I was young, I lacked sense. I was naive. I thought the world revolved around me. I thought I was unbreakable, invincible, like, what he's saying here is he's saying, hey, I saw some young men, and they're young, they lacked experience, they didn't know how the world worked, they were naive. He, the young man who lacked sense, was crossing the street near the house of an immoral woman, strolling down the path by her house. So I love the way it says this, because this is someone who, I'm sure he has intentions. Like, I'm sure he has things. Like, if I had his list here, he's a young man, he has his whole life in front of him. And I'm sure if we could see everything that he saw for himself written out, it would be quite a long list. There'd be some great stuff on there. But as we find him here, he is simply, you know, strolling down a path by her house. I picture him with his hands in his pockets. He's just kind of, you know, strolling through life. He's on an inner tube, and he's just floating through the lazy river life. There's no direction. There's no real purpose. He's not walking with purpose. He's strolling. No one's waiting for him. He's not walking quickly. He doesn't have things to do, things to accomplish. He is simply strolling through life. Now, you have a young man who probably has big dreams, hopes, goals, intentions, and you have him strolling through life. And if you asked him, are you going to accomplish these things? Are you going to live this life? He would probably say, yeah, yeah, that's the plan. That's what I'm going to do. And if you said, how are you going to accomplish these things? He would probably be like, they'll just happen. You know, at some point, I'll just be there. Like, I don't know. It'll work out. It always has. It'll be fine. So he has an intention of where he wants to be, but he is not walking in the direction of his intention. See, this is, if I had one phrase for today, it's this. It's that your direction and not your intention will determine your destination. Your direction and not your intention will determine where you end up. Or I could say, the steps you take, not the wishes you make. I got one more. It's kind of stupid. It's it's your why and your try, not your pie in the sky. Like, I like it, but it's stupid. I know, let's be honest. I was like, ooh, that sounds good. But it probably sounds better in my head than it does out here with you guys. So anyway, but it's your direction and not your intention that will determine your destination. You know, if you pack up your car and you say, all right, kids, we'll get the car, we're going to go to Florida, and you tell your friends you're going to go to Florida, and you got your suntan lotion, you got your inner tube, and you got your goggles, and you got your beach towels, and you're like, all right, well, I'll see you in a week, I'll write you a postcard, which, I don't know if people still do that, people still write postcards? I feel like by the time you got back, the postcard wouldn't have arrived. I don't know. You have to like get there and buy a postcard and fill it out. Anyway, let's skip that. No postcards. You didn't promise postcards. Anyway, so you get in the car and you're ready to go to Florida and you drive north and you're like entering Canada. Right? Like you're never going to get to Florida. You're never going to get there. Why? It's because your direction and not your intention determined your destination. It is the steps you take, not the wishes you make, will define your life. You know, and your intentions could be really great. Like, the intentions you have for life, they could be amazing intentions. Like, you could say, I want to raise kids in a home where they end up and they love Jesus and they're healthy. But if you don't walk that out personally, if you don't love Jesus, if you don't model those things, it's the direction, not your intention, that will determine your destination. Man, I want to have my relationship I'm in be a healthy relationship, and my past relationships have not been healthy, but this one, this is the one I'm getting right. Healthy relationship time. But have you changed how you handle relationships? Because it's your direction and not your intention that will determine your destination. All right, I have kids. My oldest one can't stand me, but the next one's coming around. They're going to like me. It's your direction and not your intention that determines your destination. All right, one day I'm going to get out of debt. I'm not going to be up my eyeballs in debt. I'm not going to pay so much in interest every month. Like, one day I'm going to be financially healthy, not live paycheck to paycheck. Are you going to make changes? Because it's your direction and not your intention, they'll determine your destination. I don't care how much you think and you wish and you hope. It's your direction. And the thing is about something like this phrase, your direction, not intention, determines your destination, it's true, and it seems simple, but so few of us live this way, where if there's something we are called to, something we feel like God has called us to, we're going to figure out the steps to get to that place. We just sort of float through life in hoping that one day we will arrive there. So this guy, remember, we're talking about a guy who's strolling through life. This guy is strolling through life. Pick it back up. He was crossing the street near the house of an immoral woman, strolling down the path by her house. It was twilight in the evening, as deep darkness fell. By the way, when the Bible says stuff like that, it's, yes, it is getting dark, and deep darkness is falling upon this young man. It's poetic in its language. The woman approached him, seductively dressed and sly of heart. She was the brash, rebellious type, never content to stay at home. She is often in the streets and markets, soliciting at every corner. She threw her arms around him and kissed him, and with a brazen look said, all right, now, so if you stop right here for a second, you can probably see what's coming. It's like when my kids are sprinting around the room. I'm like, guys, slow down. You're going to bump into each other. You're going to have a fat lip. Your nose is going to bleed. You're going to be crying. Stop. I see it coming. I'm like God from on high. I see what's about to happen. I can see the future. They don't ever stop. Then they bump into each other. Then the bloody nose, fat lip, they're crying. They have like an egg on their head. Like, yes, it happens. I saw the future. I saw what was coming and it happened. And we can do that here. You're like, oh my goodness. Like, I see what's coming for this guy. He's starting to as well, right? And so we're like, we hear the Jaws music, you know, and he's thinking partying like a rock star or something. I don't know what he's thinking. And so So she threw her arms around him and kissed him with a brazen look. She said, I've just made my peace offerings and fulfilled my vows. And you're like, oh, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, that's not a great pickup line. Maybe you could try it and let me know if that works. I've made my peace offerings and kept my vows. I'm going to go over here now. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Congratulations, though. No. So what you have is this is someone in a culture that what they would do is that they would offer sacrifices. When they have done wrong, when they've made poor choices, when they've sinned, when they've lived in self-destructive cycles, imagine like a bucket. And in it, you put all the bad stuff you do and the mistakes you make and the self-destructive cycles that you live in. And they go into the temple and they offer, you know, their offerings, and they've kept their vows. By that, she means like she's paid like for the animal that they sacrificed. And what happens is you go in the temple, you take care of your vows, you dump out the bucket of all the bad stuff, like, oh, took care of business today. And now you have an empty bucket and you're ready to fill it up again, right? And so she's like, hey, man, this is two things. It's, I don't want your money. This isn't about money. And I just dumped out my bucket and I'm ready to fill it up with you again, big boy, right? This is where she's at. And what's funny about this is we still do this. Like, depending on what your background is, like maybe you're someone who is from a Catholic background, or you're a Protestant background, or no background, faith background. But if you're from Catholic background, like, it's a little bit more involved. Like, you go into like the little booth, and you tell your priest, yeah, I did these things in these ways. And he says, all right, well, go say this stuff, go do these things, and you'll be all set. That's how you empty your bucket. And so you empty your bucket, and you go and fill it up again. This is how we do it. Or if you're Protestant, it's simpler, right? You're just like, I'm sorry, Jesus, I won't do it again. And then you go and do it again. Like, this is how it works. This is what people do. And this is what she is saying. She's like, all right, well, I had a full bucket of nonsense, and I went to the temple, and I took care of it, I dumped it out, and I'm ready to fill it up again with you. You're welcome, right? This is where she's at with him. And so she goes more into it. You're the one I was looking for. I came out to find you, and here you are. See, the thing is, he didn't know he was going to be there. So there's no way she did. But she claims, oh, I found you. I was looking for you. She was looking for the person who was there. And you think about where she's at for a second. Think about it from her perspective. Oh, let's go on. I'm skipping something. Wait, hold that thought. My bed is spread with beautiful blankets, with colored sheets of Egyptian linen. I perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. By the way, side note, this hit me during first service. I mean, that sounds inviting, but can you imagine putting cinnamon on your bed? Like, it would get in your eyes and stuff? Like, it would just, this does not sound like a fun evening. Like, if you think through, if you really like reading what she said, I poured cinnamon all over my bed. Okay. Cool. I'll be out here. Come, let's drink our fill of love until morning. Let's enjoy each other's caresses, which sounds like a Barry White song. For my husband is not home. He's away on a long trip. He's taken a wallet full of money with him and won't return until later this month. And so what you have here is you have someone who, the woman in this story, who is walking down a path. I mean, she's married. At some point, she did make marriage vows. She has money. She has a home. She has enough nice things that she can put things like myrrh and aloe and cinnamon on her bed. Apparently, that's desirable. I mean, she has this life, right? She has the life that for so many people is out of their grasp. They feel like it's far, like she has the finances. She says her husband's on a long trip. He loaded up his wallet. He'll be gone for a long time. So she has nice things. She's married. She has a home. She got what she wanted, and it wasn't enough. At this point, she's still floating through life. And what she's doing, honestly, is she's inviting him to her path. Like, she walked a path. She walked this journey. And along the way, she made a choice. And that became a choice. And that became a choice. And enough choices become a direction. And enough direction become your destination, your life, the life that you live. And so what she's saying, she's like, hey, man, like, it sounds wonderful. It sounds delightful. But what she's saying is, I've picked a path, and I want you to pick this path too. So follow me. Come. Fill up the bucket and then empty it and fill it and empty it and fill it and empty it and feel guilt and feel shame and empty it and fill it up again and feel like you're a failure and empty it out again and fill it up and then you feel. She's inviting him to a lifestyle, to a journey, to a path, to a destination. So you have this young man who's strolling through life who has hopes and dreams and aspirations, and he thinks that this is a moment, a single interaction, like it's just a one-night thing. But it's not. It's an invitation to a path. And it's his direction and not his intention that will determine his destination. So if you keep reading, so she seduced him with her pretty speech, enticed him with her flattery. He followed her at once, like an ox going to the slaughter. He was like a stag caught in a trap, like a deer awaiting the arrow that would pierce his heart. He was like a bird flying to a snare, little knowing it would cost him his life. And you could probably look back at your life, and you probably had small choices, significant moments. And if you make this choice in this stage in your life will go this way. If you make this choice in this stage in your life will go this way. And it's like this defining moment. And rarely when we're in defining moments do we realize they're defining moments. And he's in one right now. See, he's picked a direction, and that direction will determine his destination, not his intentions. So how about us? How about us in our seats where we're at? We've made choices. We've picked a direction, and that direction determined our destination. Are you where you intended to be? If you are where you intended to be, have you gained this, as Jesus described it, life to the abundance? Like there's this verse in Proverbs 29, verse 18 that says this. It says, where there is no vision, the people perish. Another way of saying, another translation say, where there is no vision, people cast off restraint. And what this verse is saying is that in every single one of our lives, God has placed a vision before us. There's something, something deep in our hearts, something deep in our minds, something that has defined us. And he says, there's a vision for your life. Like, for who you are financially, who you are relationally, who you are spiritually, who you are emotionally, and there is a vision there. And if you lose sight of that vision, if you just float through life, you'll perish, not have life to the abundance like Jesus promises. Or you'll throw off restraint. You see, when you're moving towards that vision, like he is, like when he's strolling, like there, if you're not moving towards a vision, if you're just strolling through life, you'll have a million opportunities to veer off, to throw off restraint, and pick other courses along the way. Where there is no vision, the people perish. So let me leave you with three things today. You know, when you're on a lazy river, the funny thing about them is the water is like 2 feet deep. You know, you could stand up at any moment. If you don't stand up, you're going to go around the loop over and over and over again. But standing up is always an option. At any point, you can say, I am sick of floating. I'm not going to float through life anymore. Lazy river, that's fine for an afternoon, but it's no way to live. It's time for me to stand up. So the first thing I would say, the first thing this series is about, the first thing we're trying to equip you and challenge you to do is stand up. Say, I am not going to float through life anymore. God has given you a vision for your life. So many times he whispers it into our ear and we're just so busy and floating that no, not right now. That sounds too hard. That's not what I'm doing. I'm not going to invest the time it would take. And he's like, I've called you to more. Stop it. I'm floating right now. Stand up. Say no more floating. The second thing is inevitably for you to float, you have to have you have to have this. You have to have an inner tube. And for you, I don't know what your inner tube is. I don't know what the thing is that's equipping you to float. I was talking to someone about this series. I was like, man, I get home from work and I watch TV and I eat dinner and then I watch more TV and I put the kids to bed and I watch more TV and I've worked hard. Like, I'm tired. Like, I'm exhausted and I just turn my brain off and then I get up the next day and I go to work and I come home and I watch TV and I eat dinner, and I watch TV, and I put the kids to bed, and I watch more TV. And I'm talking to someone who's wildly successful. Or I've talked to someone who they're like, I get home, and I do the kid thing, and then I eat dinner, and I put them in bed, and then I'm just on Amazon.com, like for hours, buying stuff. And my life is, it moves from purchase to purchase to purchase to purchase. Or the experience, like I'm pursuing the experience. Whatever that thing is. Whatever it is that equips you to float. Step one, stand up. Say, I'm not going to float anymore. Step two, pop your inner tube. Say, I'm not going back. I'm not turning around. Whatever it is that you that equips you, that enables you to float, say, that is over. And chances are, once you have said, I'm not going to float anymore, once you've popped your inner tube, you probably, what comes to your mind is areas of your life where you've been floating and Jesus has been calling you to more. And he's been whispering in your ear, I've called you to more. This is not what I made you for. There's more to life than this. Like Proverbs 29 says, without vision, the people perish. Ask God for that new and fresh vision and do whatever it takes to walk that out. So we'll be in this series for 4 more weeks. But stand up. I'm not going to float anymore. Pop your inner tube and walk out that new vision that God has given you. Let's close in prayer. You know, God, I am so thankful that you are the God of second chances. That there's no amount of floating that would have you say to us that that person's beyond help, they're beyond hope, they're just going to float for the rest of their life. You are the God of second chances. You're the God of forgiveness. You're the God who is always whispering in our ear. It doesn't matter how long we've been floating, there's more to life. So God, I am so thankful. This is not just for us here, but this is for me. The areas of my life when I have floated through. And in all of my, and honestly, like in every role I have, I'm always tempted to float through life, to not live intentionally, to not honor God with that area. In my marriage, with my kids, with my job, with my finances, it doesn't matter. It is my direction and not my intention, God. So God, if there are people here today who are floating, who just, that every day feels the same, life seems meaningless, give them a clearer vision for who you've called them to be. Give them a holy discontent for a floating lifestyle. Give them the strength to say, I am not going to float any longer, God. Make clear to us, God, what it is that we are floating on, like what it is that we have traded in our calling and our purpose for and we've settled for. If we live in this cycle of constantly waiting for that day our life finally arrives, make that clear to us, God. And you've been whispering all along in our ear, I've created you for more. But whisper it one more time. Our ears are open and we're listening. So we love you and we're thankful for you. In your name, amen.